Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Susie Orman tells it like she sees it on personal finance, and she tells it all over on her own shows, on Oprah, on PBS, on the bookshelves, on the stump. Some lover, some hater, but millions listen, and they're listening very closely these days when markets and the economy can look so terrifying. You've got questions, fears, nightmares. She's got answers. This hour, On Point personal finance guru Susie Orman on how to survive the economic meltdown. You can join the conversation. The personal finance doctor is in. What's your question on savings, debt, retirement, investment for Susie Orman? She is host of The Susie Orman Show on CNBC, has won 2 Emmys for her PBS specials on personal finance. USA Today calls her a one-woman financial powerhouse. Last year, Time magazine named her one of the world's most influential people. She worked for years as a waitress at the Buttercup Bakery in Berkeley, California, before bursting into personal finance. Now she's written 7 consecutive New York Times bestsellers on how to deal with money. Her latest is Susie Orman's 2009 Action Plan, Keeping Your Money Safe and Sound. She joins us from New York. Susie Orman, it's great to have you.
Thank you, Tom.
People are angry, scared, and confused right now. You say it right off the bat in your book, and you've been talking to people about their money for a long time, so you must be seeing something pretty different out there.
Yeah, it's interesting is that I've actually been warning for this coming of the debacle that we see in the United States of America, and actually worldwide now, for quite some time. If you've watched my PBS specials in particular, you've heard me say, come on, everybody, you've got to get out of debt. You've got to stop being a financial faker. You've got to get real with the money you have and the money that you don't have. And somehow people just never thought that this day was going to come. Well, it is here, and I'm so sorry to say it is here for a long time now. This is not something that's going to go away overnight. This is not something that isn't going to affect every single one of us in the United States of America. This is something that is very, very serious.
You warned of all those things, and they're still out there as issues, and we'll talk about them in this hour. But at the same time, I have to say, I guess you and many other financial advisors were not exactly out there saying, get out of the market because it's going to go down 40% in 2008. How should people, you know, ordinary folks trying to save and invest, look at the whole personal finance advisory industry when we all sort of walked into this rotor blade together?
Yeah. I'd like to put one correction there. We have documentation of me on my own television show in August of 2004 saying that in 2008, do not be surprised if you see the markets down exactly where they are right now. And therefore, unless you have 10 years or longer until you need this money, preferably longer, this is not money that belongs in the stock market. I have been saying it over and over and over again. But whether I've said it or I didn't say it, or whether other financial advisors said it or they did not say it, the point of the matter is this. No matter what type of an economy we're in, there is no way for us to predict in today's environment with what's going on in Iraq, Afghanistan, all throughout the world, that anything can happen at any time, not just in the economy, but within our own national safety. Therefore, I've said it, I will continue to say it, and everybody has got to get this, since we cannot predict what the future brings. You have got to invest in the known versus the unknown, which means if you know that you are going to need your money within a few years, that is not money that belongs in the stock market, never have, never will, it doesn't belong there. If, however, you have a long time, 10 years again or longer, I still will say to this day, if you can dollar cost average into this market,
put a little in every month, no matter what the market's doing.
No matter what the market's doing, as long as in this particular market, you are diversified, you have high yielding dividend paying stocks or exchange traded funds that are paying you to wait where you know the dividend is safe, secure, sound, then in the long run, you may build tremendous wealth in the future. But again, if you happen to be a retiree, you need this money. I'm so sorry to say you have got to come out. And if your financial advisors are saying to you, don't worry about it, it's okay, I would get another financial advisor, because you should be worried about it. And you have to have a reason as to why you are investing every single penny that you're investing.
Susie, we've got a lot of big questions for you, but so do our listeners. And I want to begin to bring them in right away, if I may. Let's go to Salt Lake City, Utah. And Denise, you're on the air with Susie Orman.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is my husband has a pension through his work, and we're fully vested in that pension. And they also have a 401k, but I'm wondering, they don't match in the 401k. Should we invest in a Roth IRA instead of the 401k?
My first question, Denise, would be to you, is do you have any credit card debt?
No, we don't have any debt.
Do you own a home?
We have a mortgage.
And do you plan to stay in this house for the rest of your life?
I am never moving.
You are never moving. And how old are you currently?
I'm 32.
All right, at 32. And I would imagine at the age of 32, you have a 30-year mortgage on this home. Is that correct?
We do have a 30-year mortgage, and we put about an extra $300 a month towards paying it off. So we'll have it paid off hopefully within 25 years.
And I also hear a baby in the background.
We have a two-year-old.
And are you putting money away for that child's college education?
We do put a little bit of money away every month for his education. Yeah.
All right, and so assuming you have all that together and you have at least an 8-month emergency fund, if God forbid your husband were to lose his job, because I have a feeling that you are a stay-at-home mother,
But
even so, anything can happen at any time. If you have an 8-month emergency fund and everything else that you told me is true, you absolutely should do, if you qualify for it, a Roth IRA where both you and your husband can put in $5,000 a year apiece, even though he has a 401k, whether he contributes it to it or not doesn't matter. I would absolutely be funding my Roth IRAs to the max if I could. If you're over 50, you could put in $60,000 if you qualify. And the point there being, remember what I said at the beginning of the show, if I were you, I would be looking for high-yielding, dividend-paying, exchange-traded funds, and I would be dollar-cost averaging into them every 3 or 4 months, because, again, on an exchange-traded fund, you will pay a commission. You can also look for a no-load mutual fund as to where you could do that as well, but I personally like exchange-traded funds better.
And why the Roth IRA over the 401k? Granted, there's no matching contribution from her husband's employer, but why that path?
Yes, we are currently establishing the greatest debt the United States will ever have seen in its entire history, and it's absolutely my belief that you will see that debt go up and up and up.
You're talking about government debt.
Government debt. Mm-hmm. And there is only going to be one way in the future that we are going to pay that debt off, and that will be by increasing the tax brackets of the people in the United States of America. Therefore, when you put money in a 401k, you are putting that money in pre-tax.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, at the lowest income tax brackets that we've ever seen in the United States, which is where we are right now.
But eventually, you'll be taxed on that money when you take it out.
That's right. So I would rather put money in a Roth IRA where you can pay taxes on it, because remember, with a Roth IRA, you fund it with after-tax contributions. I would rather pay taxes on it today at the lowest income tax brackets we've ever been in. In a Roth IRA, you can withdraw any money that you originally put in without any taxes or penalties, regardless of how long it's been in there or your age. If you don't need that money as it sits in there after the age of 59 and a half, you can take anything out totally tax-free. What you see is what you get. In a 401k, you cannot touch it without penalties before the age, in most cases, of 59 and a half years of age. When you do touch it, it's at ordinary income tax brackets. And what you see is not what you get, because you're going to have to pay taxes on it, and we don't know what that will be.
Susie,
that's why.
Denise in Salt Lake City, thanks very much for your call. Susie, a lot of people are sitting, opening up statements in recent months. You know, they've got a little savings. Maybe some of it is in stocks. They're looking at those horrible fever lines that go down and down. And there may be a very big temptation to get out. You're saying stay in, even though it just looks like bloody hell in a lot of those statements?
You know, there's been many times in the history of the United States, whether it's in the 70s or it was the 80s or even at a time of 2000, 2001, where we were down considerably on the statements. And eventually, markets do come back. The key here is, do you have time on your side? If you need the markets to come back within 2 years to save you, it's not going to happen. If you need the markets to come back within 20 or 30 years, I would easily be able to say, I believe it will happen. So it will depend, Tom, on your entire situation and your own time frame. But does it make any sense when something goes from, let's just say, 100 to 50, that is a 50% decline, for it to go from 50 back to 100, that is a 100% increase? The chances of that happening are almost nil if you think about it.
In what period?
Within 1, 2, 3 years, impossible.
Sure.
Maybe within 12, 15 years, maybe you will get back even. So here is my question that I want everybody to ask and answer for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
If you are holding on to a mutual fund or a stock or an exchange-traded fund that is at 50, and you're holding on to it in the hopes that it's going to go back to 100, then why would you not be buying more here at 50? Because if you bought an equal number of shares at 50 that you own at 100, your cost basis now is 75.
Susie, hold the thought right there. That's a question that really provokes an answer, and we see what you're pointing at. Why would you, if you think it's going back, why would you not want more there? Susie Orman's new book is Susie Orman's 2009 Action Plan. She joins us today from New York. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with personal finance guru Susie Orman about surviving the economic meltdown. Her new book is 7th bestseller on the New York Times list in a row, Susie Orman's 2009 Action Plan, Keeping Your Money Safe and Sound. Susie, they're lined up around the block with questions, but real quick, just many people will know your story, but many may not. You were really a waitress in a bakery cafe for 4 or 5 years before all this?
Yeah, actually, Tom, it wasn't 4 or 5 years. It was 7 years.
7 years.
So in 1973, after 4 years at the University of Illinois, notice I say at the University of Illinois, I did not say graduate, because I didn't graduate in 73 after 4 years. I actually never was very smart in school. I'm so proud to say, I just want to say this, that in May I'm being honored with an honorary doctorate from the University of Illinois.
Hey, you so go. That's great.
I find that fascinating. I finally graduated in 76. But anyway, after that, I headed out to Berkeley, California, where I lived in my van for another number of months.
Right.
I landed my dream job as a waitress at the Buttercup Bakery.
Dream job?
It was my dream job, because I had been a waitress all my life, working my way through college.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, you know, it was a wonderful job. Someday I think, you know, when I give all this up, I'm going to go back to being a waitress. It's a wonderful thing to serve people. But anyway, and I landed that job, and I was a waitress for 7 years, making $400 a month until 1979, 1980. Now I'm 29, 30 mm-hmm. years of age.
Mm-hmm.
And I get this idea that I can open up my own restaurant, and the customers at the Buttercup Bakery all gathered their forces. They gave me $50,000 as a loan to open up my own restaurant. I put that money in a brokerage firm, the broker that was just to keep it safe and sound until we were going to open up the restaurant,
mm-hmm.
and the broker lost all $50,000. Now, I didn't know what to do, and I thought, oh, I know, I can be a broker. They just make you broker. And so I went and I interviewed at a job at the brokerage firm. I was told that women belong barefoot and pregnant, but they hired me anyway.
The same permanent. It's no secret. This was Merrill Lynch back then.
That was Merrill Lynch, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And so
barefoot and pregnant? Those words came out of their mouth?
Yes, they most certainly did. And so I asked the manager at the time who said that to me. I said, Peter, how much are you going to pay me to get me pregnant? He said, $1,500 a month.
What?
And I said, fine, I'll take the job. They hired me, in my opinion, to fill their women's quota. I don't know if that's true or not, but I believe that to this day. Mm-hmm. And that's where the story began.
You sued them even while you worked for them. You got your money back. You repaid those folks, but went on. Became, just went right on in this world. We're vice president of investments for Prudential Base Securities, then an executive earlier from Merrill Lynch, and then off into your own great big world of investment. And one day, maybe back at the Buttercup Cafe or somewhere else?
What's funny is that when I'm back in California, I bump into people all the time that I used to wait on. And they're so happy for me. They're like, Susie, can you believe it? Can you believe the financial plate that you're serving up now? But they're really, really happy for me because this is a true American success story.
Well, we've got a lot of questions for you where you're standing right now. Jennifer, Providence, Rhode Island. You're on the air with Susie Orman.
Hi there.
Hi.
Tom and Susie. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm 38. My husband is 41. And about 7 years ago, we moved to Providence kind of on a whim. We wanted a change in our life, and we wanted to experience the East Coast. We were living in California.
Mm-hmm.
And we really landed on our feet. This last 7 years have been really good to us. We own a very modestly priced condo. We made decent money. We don't have kids. We don't have any credit card debt. We've been, I think, pretty smart and have lived nicely. My husband has not had a job since December 15th, and he's looking for a job around here.
Laid off, or is it an economic downturn situation?
Yeah. And mm-hmm. So I'm still working, mm-hmm. and he's looking for a job now.
Okay.
Rhode Island's small, so he's extending his job search to Boston.
Small and has one of the highest unemployment rates in the country at the moment.
Yeah, it's tough. Mm-hmm. And so he's also kind of had a dream of moving back to the West Coast and living in Seattle as well. So mm-hmm. he's also extended his job search there as well, just to kind of keep the reach open.
Okay.
But my concern is that moving 3,000 miles would be risky to a big city with a higher cost of living, with higher housing prices, to a job that's kind of unknown, as every job is. And I just wondered what Susie thought about taking that kind of a risk. We did it 7 years ago, but it seemed a lot less risky then.
Susie, a lot of people in this boat looking farther and farther afield for jobs, and with just this kind of question, what do you say?
I say to them, here is the thing, though, Jennifer, is that you have a job. You have a situation where you literally own a home that you bought many years ago, so you're probably not underwater in your home. You don't have children. You're really sitting in a great position right now. Therefore, given that you have a job, if you moved away, you would have to give up your job, and there's no guarantee that he will find another job. So I have to tell you, I would probably move my area of where I'm looking for a job within myself at this point in time, meaning I might look for jobs of other things to do. Has he where I'm currently located, rather than thinking the answer is on the West Coast, the answer is on, in Texas, the answer could be in your own backyard. What is it that your husband does?
He's in process improvement.
Manufacturing.
Not manufacturing.
Okay.
Really, different.
You're not quite sure what he does. Okay, but that's besides the point.
And I was also going to say, my job, I telecommute, so I wouldn't technically lose my job.
Ah, you could take it with you.
Ah, I see.
Yeah. But so my situation's a little different. But, we'd still be a move is...
A move is expensive. A move costs money. A move is unfamiliar. All kinds of things can happen when you again go from the known to the unknown. You know where you are. You know what you have. I would stay here. Here's what I would do if I were him. Since he's not making money, right now anyway. He hasn't been making money since December 15th. Why doesn't he go in to any company that he would like to work at, whatever it may be, and rather than giving them a resume, rather than trying to get a job with them for money, why doesn't he say to them, I am so valuable, I am so good at what I do, I can prove to you that if you hired me one day in the future, you would be so happy. I am willing to give you 2 months of my time every single day, absolutely free, so I can prove myself to you. I had a woman who was laid off here in New York City, which is where I'm broadcasting from, and she went into an ad agency. She was never a copywriter. She volunteered for 6 weeks. After 6 weeks, they gave her a half-time job. I got a call from her 2 days ago. She now has been hired full-time right here, right now, in an area that she never had any experience in, where there are massive job layoffs, because she showed them that they cannot afford not to hire her. Just a thought.
But maybe there's a chance here for Jennifer and her husband to go to Seattle. They've got their real estate situation in order. Maybe there's a good deal on housing in Seattle. Maybe they step into a good job there, step up in their housing, perhaps. They're in a modest condo.
Maybe, except the problem is Seattle now is being hit very hard as well. So if this had been a year or two ago where Seattle hadn't been hit quite yet, I would have probably said at that point, okay, let's try it. At this particular point, I just don't think I would chance that. He can try. He can go there. They don't have to move. If he lands something, okay, but land something before you set sail.
Jennifer, good luck, however it goes. Susie, here's some questions as well. Here's one. With daily expenses going through the roof, this is from my staff for you. They've got questions. What's a realistic amount to save every month? I know savings is maybe your biggest theme, but how should people calculate? I mean, it's expensive out there to live. Lots of incomes are not going up, some even going down. How do you calculate what's the right amount of savings?
The truth is, as much as you can. I don't care whether it's $50 or $100. You know, for the past 2 years, I've been on this campaign, and it's called the Save Yourself campaign. Because if you can't save yourself, I'm here to tell you, nobody else will be able to do so. And to that end, I've actually created a Save Yourself account, where if you simply put in $100 a month, every single month for 12 consecutive months, you will be given $100. That is like a 15% return on your money, the whole thing. So therefore, the correct amount to save is as much as you possibly can. For me to say to you at this point in time where you're barely able to feed yourself, oh, you have to save 10%, you have to save 20%, unrealistic. So I would rather you start with small amounts of money, like $100 a month. If you go to my website, or if you go to saveyourself.com, you'll see it. Costs nothing to sign up. If you start and 4 months later you can't finish it, who cares? You can take all your money out. There's no strings attached to this on any level. We've had over 130,000 people already do this, just so you know. And so therefore, I'm just saying to all of you, whether it's $50 a month, $25 a month, $100 a month, or whatever, you have got to start saving today.
But is it kind of an illusion? I mean, I'm looking here at numbers. You began really talking to women with your books. Now you've got an audience that's right across the board. But median U.S. adult female earns $20,014 a year. Even college-educated women's bachelor's degree, median income just $35,094 per year. With that kind of income and today's expenses, can people really save a meaningful amount of money for themselves?
Little by little, mounts will grow. Something is always better than nothing. I learned many years ago, and also just, I don't mean to keep correcting you, Tom. However, when I did start out, I did not just gear my stuff towards women. I did not write a book for women until 2007. My five previous books to my Women in Money book, my five PBS specials, the whole thing, were on, you know, Nine Steps to Financial Freedom, The Courage to Be Rich.
Fair enough. I guess Women in Money just really caught my eye, and you made such a big show with that.
Yeah, well, you know, all my books really made a big show, but what can I tell you about that one? All right, but the point of the matter is that I learned a long time ago that the more money you make, the more money you spend. And therefore, people who were making $35,000, $40,000 a year, whatever it is, didn't live this grand lifestyle. They really lived within their means. So they actually had more money to save. Maybe they spent $600 a year on clothes versus $600 on a, you know, handbag or a pair of shoes. So I don't care whether it's $100 a month, $20 a month, whatever it is, there is something that everybody can save no matter what their situation, and they've got to start doing it now. Granted, if you're unemployed currently, you're underwater in your home, you owe money on your car, you don't have a retirement account, you don't have a penny coming in, there's no money to save right now. What I'm asking all of you to do, however, is before you get into that situation, if you happen to get into that situation, the time when you have a paycheck coming in, that is the time to put money away. So again, just one more thing here. If you have money coming in, you have credit card debt, and you have no savings. And the question to you has to be, do you pay off your credit card debt or do you save money? If you think you're going to lose your job, save money, everybody. If you think, however, your job is absolutely secure, and you better think twice about that, then pay down your credit card debt. But please make sure you have emergency money, because if you can't save yourself, I'm telling you, saveyourself.com, everybody, best deal in town. If you can't save yourself, nobody else is going to.
Let's go to Emma in Lexington, Massachusetts. Emma, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm 25, and I currently work for a nonprofit, so I don't have a ton of money coming in. I'm able to save maybe about $100 a month after paying, you know, rent and paying down my credit card, which I almost have paid off. But I do want to go back to school, and hopefully sooner rather than later.
Okay.
But I keep hearing that all of the scholarships are drying up and I don't have a lot of savings. So I'm wondering, is this the time to go back to school or do I have to put this off for a few more years?
Would going back to school mean putting it on a credit card, Emma?
Well, that's my other question is all of my investments were tied up in the stock market and I lost a little bit less than half. So that had been my plan until I got the numbers back, and then I'm sort of rethinking going back to school now.
School, down markets, and debt. Susie.
So, Emma, with the utmost respect to you and everybody listening right now, this is not easy for me to say. This is not something I'm proud that I'm about to say, but is it realistic? It is. I think especially for those of you, if you're going back to school now and you're going to have to take student loans in order to go back to school, I think you need to postpone doing it at this point in time. And the reason is this. Please remember that a student loan, in most cases, they are not dischargeable in bankruptcy. And if you graduate school and you can't find a job, and the problem is today is finding a job, there has been many reports done on this at this point in time. It's taking months and months. It used to be 3 months after you graduated, you would find a job. Now it's extending to 6 months, to 8 months, and it could be even longer. And you now are competing with all the people that are unemployed that may be older than you and are willing to probably work less than you, whatever, you know, for less than you. So you have to be very careful here. So student loan debt is very, very dangerous if you cannot pay it back, because even if you put it on deferment or a forbearance, it will go from $20,000 to $40,000 to $60,000. And then what are you going to do? Because then they will come after you and there is no way for you to get out of it. So you have to be very clear if you're going back to school that you know you have a job, that in fact it will pay for it and will not be something that will be a burden to you later on. So if I were you, I would wait right now, given that you're saving, you're at least able to put some money away. Again, I'm going to keep saying this, you know, go to saveyourself.com and that's where you should be putting your $100 a month. Why not get $100 12 months from now, then take the money and do whatever you want with it? Who cares? But it's just be very careful, Emma. That would be my suggestion to you in this economy that is not going away quickly. I would be very, very careful.
Tough on Emma's ambition to hear
I
that
know.
Advice. I mean, people have been told, go to school, better yourself, get an education.
Yes, and that's true when you can get an education and you can graduate and know that you can get a job, because an education is for you to be able to get a job. However, to go to school and get an education and acquire debt with no job prospect, be very careful.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with personal finance guru Susie Orman about surviving the economic meltdown. She's written 7 best-selling, New York Times best-selling books in a row on personal finance advice. Her latest is Susie Orman's 2009 Action Plan, Keeping Your Money Safe and Sound. Susie, I've got one here from a young staff member, new mother, says, will our generation ever have what our parents have? What are the new expectations for our golden years?
You know, the first answer that comes to mind here is, yeah, maybe this generation will have something that your parents didn't have, which are called values. I'm sorry to say. The value of what it takes to live a life that isn't in debt, isn't beyond your means, isn't this entitlement type of thing. So a lot of the reasons that we're in the situation that we're in today obviously come from whether it's the administration, the SEC, the brokerage firms, the mortgage companies, the banks. Yes, they had the majority to do with why we are here today. However, we have all got to take responsibility as well for the fact that we overspent, we overconsumed, we undersaved, and we did this to ourselves. So if your generation can learn right here and right now from what is going on, from over-consumerism, from wanting to show the world how great you are by what you have versus wanting to show the world how great you are by who you are, if you can learn that lesson, oh, you will have far more than your parents ever had, because the truth of the matter is everything is coming down in price. The good news here, the silver lining for the younger people out there, is you're going to be able to afford a home now that if everything had kept going like it is, you never would have been able to afford a home. You're going to be able to dollar cost average little by little into these stock markets through your retirement plans and or your own means. And guess what? Eventually, you're going to make a lot of money off of this. So this can be a tremendous wealth building time as long as you learn the lessons that, I'm sorry to say, your parents now are learning the hard way.
Tough message there. You say we're in trouble today, you write, because everyone was happy to lie or happy to believe lies that any sane person could see right through. It was a wild, drunken party of dishonesty and greed on a national scale. So now maybe we'll have more in values terms, you say. But in financial terms, even with those breaks on housing prices, maybe some other prices coming down, in strictly economic financial terms, do you think this upcoming generation is going to have the lifestyle, the life that the post-World War II Americans had?
Yeah, it's one has to really question, is the lifestyle that we had, is that really a lifestyle that we should be, that we should desire to have? Should we desire to have 20,000 square feet homes, 5 cars, 4 boats, you know, vacations galore?
You've got $25 million in the bank and $7 million in a house. That sounds like you.
$15 million in homes.
Okay, okay, 15. Well, it doesn't sound like you're scrimping on those fronts. I mean,
yes. However, when I buy a home today, no matter where I buy a home, I write a check for it. Now, when I write a check, and I'm not saying this just to be bragging how much money I have. That is not the point. I have homes throughout the world because I travel and work there. Do you know that the largest home that I have happens to be 2,200 square feet? Do you know for the 10 years that I had a home in New York City, it was 800 square feet? I only buy what I need, period. I never buy more than what I need. And so, therefore, one might say, well, why do you need all those homes? Well, number one.
Yeah, 2,200 square feet apiece, you must have a lot of them if they're worth $15 million.
No, actually, I'm done. You know, okay. It's not true. It's
very
just
well
weird.
Placed, I guess. Yeah.
All right, there you go. But the point being is that I live by this rule, that if I cannot afford to write a check for what I'm purchasing, I cannot afford to buy what I want. And I'm only allowed in my own rules to buy something with new money coming in, not with money that I already have. So if I want to buy something, I have to earn that money in that year or the 2 years so that I've saved it up so that I can purchase it. If I want to buy a new home, I can't sell an old home to buy a new home. That old home money goes where? Into my accounts, so that my net worth increases rather than decreases. That's the rules I live by. Now, yes, it's, you know, you look at me and maybe, you know, it's like I am not bragging about the money that I have. I've worked very hard for it. I keep it safe and sound. But I'm telling you, no matter what the levels are, we all can do this.
Let's get a call from Liz in Hampton, Virginia. Liz, you're on the air with Susie Orman.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Susie. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Yes.
I wanted to quickly ask Susie, would she be considering becoming an economic advisor for President Obama?
Well, I have to think about this. I haven't been asked by President Obama to be an economic advisor. Do I have opinions as to what should be done? I do. I am sure if the president called or one of his staff members called and asked for my opinion, I would be more than happy to give it on any level. Has that happened yet? I'm sorry to say it has not.
And if they did, what would you say? What do you think about the stimulus package, the banking bailout? We've heard a lot of news in recent weeks. How do you think the Obama plan's rolling out?
Here's the only advice that I would have given, and I've said this before publicly on television, is that I would have said this is a massive, massive, massive problem. And more than the stimulus program that's recently, you know, been into consideration here, the TARP program is even more important because I will forever believe, and I've said this many times, that until we correct the real estate problem here in the United States of America, until we actually address those that are currently underwater, and underwater meaning that you owe more on your homes than they're worth, people who were really, really good people, Tom, they didn't fall behind on their mortgage payments, and they're still not behind on their mortgage payments, but they owe on possibly Tampa, Florida, for instance, a $600,000 mortgage and the home is worth $200,000. Mm-hmm. Why should they continue to pay on that? It makes absolutely no sense when you could get the exact same home for $200,000 next door. So until we address that problem, we have a serious problem that's going to continue in the United States of America known as foreclosure. So the only thing that I would have said is, please don't go on the air and tell people that we'll hear the details in a day. And then the Treasury of the Secretary gets on with no details. And then you see the markets go down dramatically. This was a very severe problem. There is nothing wrong with saying that this is a problem that's going to take time to solve, and I am going to wait until I know for sure that we have a plan that will solve it. And until we have a plan that will solve it, we are just going to have to continue to wait until I feel secure in what I'm saying. That is really the only thing at this point that I would have said differently or had done differently than what was done a while ago.
What about all that bad debt? I mean, the banks are holding it. They call it toxic assets. Do you think the country's going to end up nationalizing banks? There's been talk about it. Serious
yes,
talk?
Yes, I hope that the United States does not end up nationalizing banks. I hope that somehow that the system is allowed to work this out itself, so to speak. And I am a tremendous fan, it is no secret of that, of Sheila Bair, the chairman of the FDIC. I think she's had some tremendous, tremendous ideas in terms of how she worked out the situation with IndyMac Bank and those foreclosure messes there. And I think that they will eventually here move in the right direction, but I do think they have to be very, very careful here and go very slowly and also not continue on this theme that it is dire. We're all going down. I think the United States of America now, even though it is a serious situation, they need to also know it is a situation that over time will be solved and that it's a hopeful future, not one that is dire. I think that word needs to go out of one's vocabulary.
Michael, in Boston, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks.
Yeah.
Actually, I totally agree with what you just said. People seem to forget the market goes up and down, too. Like it's
big down right now.
but it will always correct. It always does this. It's always done this. But I actually have a question or a comment. I noticed that a lot of people talk about surviving. It's the surviving. And I sort of think it in 2009 that maybe it could be beyond surviving. What would you recommend to people? You know, a good investor makes money when the market goes up or down. So what would you recommend to people who even now, with the market doing what it's doing, how would they make money? How would you recommend they make money now?
Not well, just tread water.
Yeah. If you really want to make money right now in the stock market, all right, because you can make money simply by, you know, there's all ways to, quote, make money. So your definition has to be clear in terms of what does it mean to make money. You can leave your money in a CD and make money. You can have money in municipal bonds, where I've had my money now for 2 years, and I've made a considerable amount of money. But I have a feeling that you're talking about the stock market in terms of how do you make money in this stock market in this environment. This, and if that is your question, then the answer to that is, this is absolutely a trader's market. This is not a market where you would simply buy and hold. This is a market where if you want to make money right now and you want to realize those gains right now, that you would short market, you would short it, you would long it, you would do spreads, you would do straddles, you would be in options, you would be doing all of these things, but you would have to be a sophisticated investor here in order to take advantages of these swings. And if you are not sophisticated, if you do not follow it every single second of the day, chances are you are going to lose more money than make more money. Even the best of them out there have been having tremendous difficulties here making money. So my advice to all of us would be is careful, careful, careful. I don't know. I'm not so into making money. I'm just into not losing what I've made.
Municipal bonds, where you've got most of yours, the proof of that. Michael, thanks for calling Jay in Pompano Beach, Florida. You're on the air with Susie Orman.
Hi. I've saved all my money. I haven't done the typical American thing. And what I'm concerned about is the impending superinflation that's going to happen with all this money the Treasury's spending. What should I do? Put my money into gold? Should I stockpile toilet paper?
do? Yeah. If your concern really is inflation and that's where you think that we are really going, then you might want to put some of your money into TIPS, Treasury and, you know, inflation protection securities, which obviously your yield goes up because it's attached to inflation. Gold here, as this program right now is being aired, is already considerably up. If you had watched me maybe 2 months ago when I said yes, I would be buying gold. Gold was approximately $700-$800 an ounce. Now we're nearing in the 900 area, $1,000 an ounce. So you have to be very careful because we've just seen a tremendous increase in gold. Do I still think, however, that a small percentage of your portfolio could be in gold, and the way that I would be doing it would be in the exchange-traded fund, the GLDs, but a very small portion that I would be buying on dips, and I would watch it very, very carefully. So again, if inflation is your worry, then one of the best ways to counter that would be with the TIPS, if you're looking to be safe and sound and not investing in the stock market with things that might take advantage of inflation as well.
Pat in Pompano Beach, are you encouraged by that?
This is Jay.
Oh, sorry, Jay.
I'm encouraged, and I'm just concerned about the buying value of my money that I managed to save.
Jay, I have to ask you, do you own a home?
Yes.
Is your mortgage paid off?
Oh, yeah, a long time ago.
Long time ago. All right. Yep. So
I've done everything right.
And he's still worried about getting mowed down by inflation.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Jay. You've done everything right. You still have your money. Don't let now what's happening change the course of what you've done. Again, I think we're going to see these markets go up and down and all over the place in years to come. As I've written in my book and I've said many times, I do think it's going to be to the year 2015 until we have totally gotten our hands around this problem and everybody feels hopeful again. So you have a while here, and I just, that's not to say that you won't see these markets go dramatically up, but then they can come dramatically down as well. I don't know. I think you're doing just fine, boyfriend.
Jay, thanks very much for your call. Let's get a call from Pat in Arlington, Massachusetts. Pat, you're on the air.
Tom, Susie, I am so thrilled you took my call. I'm a big fan of both of you.
Great. What's the question, Pat?
My question is that through some providence, I moved my 401k money out into a conservative stable value fund in August. So I actually haven't lost anything out of my 401k since August.
Lucky you.
I feel very lucky, but I also don't want to lose all the growth. So I'm trying to figure out how do I know when to put it back into the stock market.
Mm-hmm. Pat, how old are you?
I'm 41.
41. So you have at least 20 years or longer until you need this money. The only way that I would be going back into the stock market here would be little by little every month into a section within your 401k if they had high yielding dividend paying, so safe dividends where it's not going to go away, a mutual fund or an exchange traded fund. If you do not have that within your 401k, honest to God, I would not be worried about missing out on something here. I would rather be sitting on the sidelines and seeing these markets and everything come to pass and then get on the train, then get on it and watch it go down. Until real estate turns around, until the financial bank stocks turn around, those are your two key indicators, I don't think you're going to see the majority of the stock market go anywhere. So if you can't put your money somewhere that's giving you a dividend yield to wait and your dollar cost averaging into it, I would stay exactly where I am if I were you.
Pat, thanks very much for your call. Susie, we've just got a minute here. Do you think Americans are getting smarter under the pressure of this crisis about what they do with their money? Or you've written a lot about the emotions that surround money. Are they getting, you know, scared into doing the wrong thing?
Yeah, they could get scared into doing the wrong thing. Pat's, you know, our last caller's question concerned me because so often our fear, did you hear her say it? I was afraid of missing it.
Sure.
But when you're afraid of missing something, then you then go ahead and you do something and then you end up saying, oh, my God, why did I do that? I'd like to hear her say, you know, that I think it's a wise thing for me to go back in the market right now. Whenever you see the word fear in front of something, I'm afraid to do this, I'm afraid that, that's an indication your emotion is leading the way and you should not do it.
So Number one advice, I guess, save. And then what? When you think it's wisely time, we've heard your path to tiptoe back in.
That's right.
But once you've got the big load that you've got there, you're not going. You're not deeply in. 5% or something like that in the market?
Yeah, I have very, you know, I have money in the market. I've traded the market. I'm actually a very sophisticated stock market trader. But the majority of my money has been in zero coupon municipal bonds forever now. They're up 20% so far this year. So all those critics who have said municipal bonds, what does Susie know? Susie knows a lot. Thank you very much.
Susie Orman's 2009 Action Plan, Keeping Your Money Safe and Sound, is just out. Susie Orman in New York. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.